Sigrid and Don't Feel Like Crying. Hello, how are you? I keep having sneezing attacks. Hopefully I won't do it on air, because as charming as that would be, no one needs to hear that. Hello and welcome to Live and Local with BB Lynch, Dame BB Lynch. We have a brilliant show lined up for you tonight. We have music, we have guests, we have no sneezing, and we have probably award-winning radio till 10 p.m. Shall we do it? Whitney Houston. Houston, I'm your baby tonight. Oh, Whitney. how are you? I hope you're good. It's March the 1st. It's officially spring. I'm not sure if it is officially spring, but it is in my head. It's my gorgeous friend Helen's birthday, and Helen's birthday is always the start of the good weather in my eyes. So, Helen's birthday. I don't know how 35 is going to treat her, but I hope she enjoys it. I hope you're good. I hope tonight will cheer you up. If you need cheering up, you don't need cheering up, this will just further enhance your gorgeous mood. Let me tell you about tonight's show. From 9, we'll be enjoying an hour of upload, hearing your great contributions and chatting with one of the creators. And in a few minutes, I'll be speaking with Lewis-based author Richard Dockra about his fabulous new book, which is next to me here on the desk. And yeah, I've got some questions. It's going to be a great show, so please stay with us. Oh, I love that lifestyle, Jason Derulo and Adam Levine. So I'm really happy to introduce my first guest tonight. Welcome to Live and Local, Lewis-based coach, consultant and author of Life and How to Think About It, Richard Dockra. Hi, Richard.
Good evening, Bibi. How are you?
I'm not bad. How are you?
All right, thanks. Pretty good.
Yeah, I know. It's a hard question to answer. I remember going to a party once, and the boy I was seeing opened the door, and he went, "How are you?" And I told him, "You went, BB, we're British. We don't actually really say how we are."
It's true.
We just say we're okay. Are you Dockra or Dockra?
It's Dockra. Dockra. I like Brilliant. The building fans.
Okay. So you're in Lewis, lovely Lewis.
It's a beautiful place. I actually live in Kingston, which is right next to Lewis, as you probably know, and just at the foot of the Downs, which is a glorious place to be. Very lucky to be here for all the beautiful walks during lockdown and things like that. It's been quite useful.
Yeah, oh, quite useful. I know. Have they saved you a bit?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's been a very, very hard time for everybody. But I think for me, just getting out and being able to get into nature and exercise has been the thing that's kept me sane.
Mine's been sitting by this. I wish I could say exercising, Richard, but mine's been sitting by the sea and just eating.
That's a good thing. That's surely a good thing.
It's not a bad thing. Your new book, I'm going to read some of the blurb. This sounds so up my strasser. I love it. So Life and How to Think About It, The No-Nonsense Guide to a Thoughtful Life. So yeah, some of the blurb. Richard Dockra explores 10 big questions, from what am I to how can I think well, that would change the way you see everything and give you a renewed sense of curiosity, direction and passion for life. It's essential reading for anyone who wants to make the most of the unique and finite opportunity they have to exist. First of all, what is a thoughtful life?
Well, I suppose a thoughtful life is actually taking the time to really reflect a little bit on, you know, what it means to actually be alive. And what it's like to be a human being. I think really the book starts with the idea that being alive as a human being isn't easy. I guess particularly at the moment and in the last year, right? Life is complex, and we're not really given much help, whether it's in our education or by parents or whatever, really to navigate it, you know, for what it means to be alive as a human being through to how to best approach the task of living. And I think we generally rush through our lives without really thinking about these things. And before you know it, you know, life's gone by in a flash and you're looking back and you regret not appreciating it more or making the most of the things that matter to you. And I think that's a great shame, because being alive is an incredible opportunity, you know, but it's also short and we tend to take it for granted. So the book shows you how to make the most of it by living in a thoughtful and well-informed way. And I kind of guess it gives people a map to help them navigate life, you know, whether you're 8 or 80 years old.
Why didn't you write this when I was 20?
You know what? I have to say, you know, part of the reason I wrote it is for the young me, for the 20-year-old me.
Yeah.
So if I can just briefly tell you the story of that. So I mean, I was born into a, you know, normal middle class family, like a lot of people, and, you know, perfectly nice upbringing. But it was a bit boring, you know, going shopping, watching TV. And I really thought there must be more to life. But I found it really hard to find out what that was. But, you know, in the end, I read a lot and I studied philosophy in the end at sort of postgraduate level and stuff like that, and worked on things. And I just saw that no one's really given these skills in life to be able to stand back and see the big picture. picture so that they can navigate it better. So actually, you know, the problem is we live quite limited and restricted lives. So I think the aim of this book is to, yeah, help people to stand back, look at the big picture, and then, you know, look at all the potential there for living a really interesting and thoughtful life.
Did you write this because of and during lockdown or before?
I wrote it during lockdown, but actually it wasn't really written with lockdown in mind. But actually, as it turns out, I mean, someone's already said to me, that, you know, thank goodness this has come along at the end of lockdown, because I guess a lot of people in the last few months have been going through a process of, you know, thinking about what matters to them in life and perhaps reassessing what really matters to them. And hopefully that will be, it will be a really useful tool in, you know, helping to reflect on that.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, I mean, there's pretty much nothing good about this time. It, you know, it's just been hideous, yeah. The pandemic, the lockdowns. But they have given us something, and that is the opportunity to consider what we want to be our new normal. If we're going to have a new normal, I guess this is the time to do it and to make those changes.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I think one of the big messages of the book is that in the end, you know, it's up to you. It's up to you to create the meaning in your life. You know, there isn't any great big sort of preordained meaning in life. It's about how you want to live, and it's about what really matters to you. And I think one of the things the book helps, one of the chapters is how to find meaning. And it's to help you sort of stand back and go, well, OK, what really matters to me in my life? And what you know, where do I want to go with these years that I've got?
I don't like you keep saying how finite it is, and I know that's the truth. I know that in my head and in my heart, but it's really, it's weird hearing that.
It's scary though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Scary? And I think when I wrote this, it, again, one of the chapters, and I don't want to bring the whole evening down here, is how to think about death.
Yes.
Sorry about that, but that is one of the chapters. But again, we're terrified of even thinking about death. We, you know, we see death all around us on TV shows and in films, don't we? But we rarely talk to each other about it. We rarely think about it. But actually, what I'm arguing in the book is it really pays to actually, even for a short time, just reflect on, well, you know, what does it mean to be alive? Because thinking about death is as much as thinking about life and what you want to get out of it. And I think I was going to say also, it really is helpful to think about death so that you can serve people, the people you love better when they are approaching that time. And it's, you know, there's a lot of really important stuff about that, about how to talk to people that we know, family members, about, you know, what do they want in their final months and weeks, because that can make all the difference to having, you know, a better end of life.
I find this so interesting. It's my oldest friend's birthday today. Not oldest as in age, but we've known each other since we were 14. And it's her birthday today. And we had a socially distanced walk yesterday. And we were talking about this. And both, I'm sure, well, happy birthday, Helen, anyway. And I'm sure Helen won't mind me saying this, but both our mothers are dead, and we both knew each other's mums and loved each other's mums. And so I think Helen and I have always had this, there's something really lovely about friendship that you can really just go to a certain level. It's always fun when we talk, but you can just really go to a level with someone. And Helen and I know helped each other through the grief of our parents dying. And yesterday we were talking about this, and I was talking to Helen. Helen has children, I don't. And so there's two of your chapters I'm going to touch upon here. There's a real, one of the issues of childlessness is really finding what your meaning is.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen and I were discussing that a bit yesterday. And then talking about, and because we both had grief in our life, about, you know, about that, about death. And so we kind of talked a little bit about these subjects yesterday. And the upshot of it was, last night, I dreamt about my mum. And I had a conversation with my mum that I never had with her in life that I wish I had. Isn't that interesting? So
that's,
I think it was kind of,
yeah,
stirring all that stuff up, which I love. But this isn't even a question. It's just me talking about me, but it's all really relevant. When my mum died when I was 22 and she was 40, and then my dad died when I was 42. And when my dad died, I think only then I grieved my mum properly, because I had the vocabulary to grieve, and I had people around me that would allow me to grieve. So in what you're saying about how you, if you're approaching death and dying, and how that will makes the end of life easier, better for someone who's dying, it also must make it better for the people that are grieving.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, again, just opening up about this stuff, and as I think you put it very well, that finding the language to talk about it is so important. And I think, I mean, just from a personal point of view, a couple of years ago, I decided that as I spend my life writing about this stuff, I ought to put it into practice. So I sat my family down, my brother and my parents, and I said, look, we need to have a conversation about, you know, what you guys want. What do you feel about it towards the end of, when you get towards the end of your life? What will you want? What were your preferences? And we had this 1 hour conversation. It was not hard. I was surprised at how easy it was actually to have the conversation. And it was just like a weight being lifted from everybody. You know, because now my brother and I knew what my parents wanted, whether they wanted to go into care homes or how they wanted to be treated at the end. And we all just thought, well, we can enjoy the rest of our lives all together now without having to worry about this stuff.
And that's the point of it. So, and that's the point of the whole book, isn't it? And we're talking about dying and death, but it's about... I used to do another radio show, and my producer used to say, every time you mention your dead parents, I'm going to play a really jaunty track, like Bed Underneath, so just to lift it a bit. But the point of the book is we have got a finite time, so to live it brilliantly.
Exactly, and not just to sit there thinking, well, you know, this time will actually go on forever, and it doesn't really matter what I do now. It does matter what you do now. You've got to grab it. But I think the argument that I'm making in the book is that actually by being able to maybe sort of stand back, I mean, it's a bit like a map. The book is a bit like a map in that, you know, when you're stuck within a detailed territory, you know, a map is really handy to, you know, where you just stand back, look above the territory around you and see where you are. And, you know, we're all stuck in our everyday lives being busy and pressurized, and something that can help you just stand above that and go, okay, well, what am I? Right, I'm a human being. What tendencies am I subject to as a human being in the way I think and behave? What is the universe that I live in? And that, you know, looking at some of those big questions, but then starting to say, okay, well, what is the life I want to lead? What does it mean to be alive? I mean, that's a stunning question in itself, because, you know, just appreciating the fact that we exist is a pretty cool thing, I think, and certainly makes me feel better. So there are tons of things that you can think about in terms of the big questions about, you know, how to make the most of life, how to behave well towards others, and we can just do this in a slightly more considered and thoughtful way.
How does the book present itself? I've got it in front of me, hang on a sec. This is the sound of me leaning over. It's lovely. It looks so great. So thinking is enjoyable. Just literally opened a page. Thinking is enjoyable. So are you giving... It's not mantras so much, is it? Is there practical... Are there practical lessons?
There's lots of practical lessons, yeah. So I think it's a mix. So I would say, you know, this isn't a book for philosophers, right? And I strongly believe that everybody can think about big questions in life. And in fact, they're really, really important for everybody to think about. So I'm not a philosopher. I'm trying to write something that's accessible for everybody. So what it goes from is, you know, big principles such as big questions like how to find meaning in life through to actions. And as you'll see, as you flick through the book, there are sort of little sections of actions where it's asking people to reflect on something or to go and take a particular action at the end of the chapter that will help them to move their life forward a bit. So it's a really nice mix of, you know, theoretical and practical stuff. But all of it is really accessible and I hope interesting.
It's that physician heal thyself, isn't it? So you really do have to kind of, you know, walk the walk.
Oh, yeah, I have to, don't I, really? I mean, let's be honest, though. I am a human being like the rest of the people, although my wife may not agree. I am a human being. And, you know, I can't walk the walk exactly as I say. I'm talking about, you know, the principles here. But I certainly think I really try to live a thoughtful life. And I think some of the principles in the book I do follow, and they give me a great deal of pleasure. So, for example, when we're looking at in the chapter where we talk about, you know, how to find meaning in life, some of the things... I think what I was saying in that chapter is that generally across the world, there are quite similar things that give people meaning. You know, you choose your own meaning, but there are quite a few similar things. So things like people in relationships, being around nature, having a sense of purpose, all these sorts of things. And I try and, you know, embed those things in my life as well. And I guess I have a good idea of what gives me pleasure and meaning. So, like I say, I often am going out running or walking in nature because I know that just... It's just good for me and it makes me feel great. So I think it's partly about understanding yourself as well, you know, and not necessarily listening to everybody around you about how you should behave and the things that you should care about. It's, you know, look at yourself and what do you really value and what really matters to you.
I really like that. So you're not preaching, you're just giving people the questions and then they can find their own answers by asking themselves those questions. Exactly. So, and has this come from a school of philosophy? I know you're saying you're not a philosopher, but has it come from like a religious base or a school philosophy, or have you come up with this, with the questions to ask?
It's come up from a non-religious base, but the aim of it is to be very accessible to everybody. And I think one of the key things I put at the very start of the book is it's meant to be it's accessible to everybody, and it's trying to be respectful of everybody's views from wherever they come from these sorts of issues. And it looks about belief, and it looks about how we make sense of the world, and talks about those sorts of things. And I think, because that's the whole idea of all of this again, is that we all come into this world and we all come into these sorts of issues with quite different beliefs and quite different takes. And we live in a world at the moment which can be quite divisive. People can be quite dismissive of each other's views and ideas. And I'm trying to just bring something here that everybody will find some use from.
So when we said earlier that the pandemic has kind of given us one of the only gifts it's given us is we can maybe now think, okay, do we want to go back to what life was before, our specific life? Do we want that? Do you think there's going to be major ways that people will change? Or how do you think people will change?
I think it's very difficult to say. And I think there are, on a very broad practical level, I think one of the biggest things that will change is about work. And I think we've seen, that sort of this idea of the working from home, people have realised actually there are some advantages in working from home, particularly people who have to commute, 4 hours a day to London or whatever they're doing. And actually, I think that will be quite a big change in people's lives, because again, it enables people to see their families more, it gives them more time. And I think it's makes them ask the question, well, what was I spending those extra hours doing? So I think that's really important. I think whether it will change people's attitudes towards their lives, that's really hard to say, because I know, personally, I've spent a lot less money on stuff this year than I ever did. I mean, I didn't normally buy loads of stuff, but we just haven't had the opportunity to buy stuff. Now, for me, that's quite a good thing, because it means that we're not spending money on consuming stuff that we don't really need. But whether or not, as soon as the brakes are let off, will everybody go back to the shops and buy loads? Who knows? But I do think it's certainly given people a chance to think about what really matters in life. And I think one of the core things for me is that it's about people. One of the most horrible things about coronavirus and lockdown has been us being away from each other. Yeah. And I think, one of the things I'm most looking forward to at the end of all this is being able to give my mum a hug and being able to see my friends and, just, again, give people a hug and see people. And I think that's been one of the worst things. And I think perhaps that's enabled people to appreciate, some of the things that really matter in life are really simple, like relationships and friends and all those things, that sometimes we can easily take for granted.
Yeah, and I really hope we maintain that feeling, because it is very easy, isn't it, to really just go back to old ways, even though I'm saying, hopefully we won't, we can choose if we want to or not. But it's like, I mean, I guess I haven't done it, but like childbirth, apparently, your brain lets you forget what it was like, so you do it again. It's like we kind of forget what things felt like, I think. And I'm hoping that doesn't happen, and hope we just maintain some of the difference. I'm going to ask you another question, and it's going to bring down again, so let's put the jaunty bed on. But so what do you think happens after we die?
I don't think anything happens after we die. I think that's my take on it. And I think I tend to kind of go for sort of an evidence-based view of the world. And as far as we know, life just ends. And I think this is actually, I guess, a kind of a hopeful thought rather than a sort of negative thought. And in that you can see life as a brief flash of light and existence, bookended by non-existence, bookended by nothing happening. So in a way, that means that you don't necessarily have to fear death in the way that so many of us do. It's actually, how do you make the most of this amazing flash of a few decades of existence?
It's so interesting, because what I'm going to say to that is, if that's true, and I it probably is, why are we so complex or difficult or challenged or conflicted within? Do you know what I mean? If this is just it, why isn't it smooth?
I think it's because we want answers, don't we? And sometimes we want quite simple answers, but also sometimes we want comforting answers. And I think some of the things that we talk about in the book about how what sort of view of reality do we want to adopt, each of us as individuals? Do we want to try and adopt the most accurate view based on evidence, or do we want to have a view that makes us feel better about the world? And, you know, we can adopt different views for different purposes. And I think some of the stories we tell about death and about life after death are partly there to make us feel better about it and to take the fear away of it. And I think if you look at, you know, the history of human beings and thought, you know, we've looked at death has been one of the things that we've been so afraid of, right? I mean, almost the whole of life is often thought for many people just being afraid of death and finding ways of putting it off or not thinking about it.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, and I think that that's where a lot of stories and a lot of institutions have kind of grown from in human society. So again, though, I'd stress that I would certainly not look down on anybody who thinks, right, well, it's, there's life after death, and that, because that feels better, and there's a sense of reassurance in that. But I would just urge people to have a look at some of the things that I'm talking about in the book, because actually, by seeing life, as I say, this brief flash of existing, this exciting period of this having this opportunity to exist, it makes you look at life in a positive way rather than death in a very fearful, negative way.
So again, yesterday, me and Helen... She's so wise. I love her so much. She just and I said, well, how do you do day by day? And she just said, I do it day by day, you know. And she without kind of forcing herself to, happens to be one of those brilliant people that lives in the present.
That's great.
Isn't that a gift?
I think it's a gift because, I mean, you know, on a personal basis, I think I'm a bit of a worrier, you know,
yeah.
And I can easily get sort of anxious about things. And again, that's your brain. It's said to be playing tricks on you. And I think one of the things that I talk about in the book is how to think better, how to think well.
Mm.
And some of that can be quite sort of practical stuff like critical thinking about, you know, making sure you double, you know, when somebody... If you're trying to be influenced by somebody or politicians or whatever it is, you know, and thinking, double checking what they're saying, all that sort of. But some of it is about just managing your thoughts and mindfulness and things like that. And I think those sorts of practices about just noticing the thoughts coming in your head and realizing they're just thoughts can be really helpful. But if somebody is naturally able to do that anyway, then they're doing pretty well.
They're doing really well.
Great. Yeah, yeah.
Richard, it's so fascinating talking to you. The book. It just sounds incredible. I'm so glad I've got it. Thank you. So Life and How to Think About It is published by Big Idea Publishing, and it's out on March the 4th, which is my birthday, Richard.
And we'll be... happy birthday.
Thank you. And we'll be available 50... I can't even talk about it. And we'll be available in paperback and ebook from all good bookshops and online retailers, and find out more at richarddocra.com. Richard, such a treat to speak to you. I'm going to read it and ring you every hour on the hour and tell you what I think.
Fab. That'd be grand. Thanks for your time, Bibi. Lovely to speak to you.
Speak to you soon. Take care.
Bye.
That was Brittany. We had Brittany with Toxic, and then there was Dermot Kennedy and Giants, and now here's some weather. Tonight it will stay clear for a time with only some light patchy cloud. Later on, low cloud and patches of fog will build in from the east. A light easterly breeze, minimum temperature 0 to 3 degrees Celsius, that's 32 to 37 degrees Fahrenheit. And tomorrow, any lingering cloud and fog will clear away during the first half of the day. This will allow for some brighter spells during the afternoon. Yes! In between a few patches of cloud. Oh. Maximum temperature 11 to 14 degrees Celsius, that's 52 to 57 degrees Fahrenheit. Ellie Goulding, Love Me Like You Do. Lovely Ellie. I kind of casually dropped in with Richard. Wasn't Richard Dockery brilliant? His book sounds so fantastic, and genuinely, all the questions in it. So I'm 55 on Thursday. I mean, A, how did that happen? B, why did that happen? D, what happened to C? That's a Paul Lester joke. And genuinely, the questions in Richard's book, I'm like, okay, what's the meaning of life? I need to sort all this stuff out. I need to find it out now because I'm 55. Is 55, how old are you? It was 55 a terrifying one for you? 40 I didn't care about. 50 did make me blanch a little bit, and 55 is has sent my poor head going. Linda has sent a text. Linda, I don't understand the joke. Although, actually, I think you've done an attachment, haven't you? Let me see if I can open that. No, I can't. Hope it's not rude. It's enjoy the joke attached and I can't open it. But Linda from Red Hill, so it is the first day of spring. I'm sure the joke is naughty. Hello, thank you for listening. And Richard has just sent a tweet. It was lovely to speak to you, Richard. Fascinating chat, fascinating book. Really, really excited about that. Am I allowed to give shout outs to people? So I have to Helen because it's her birthday. I'm going to anyway. My friend Mandy had some great news today, so I'm thrilled by that. And my friend Emma, I'm sending you lots of love. I just want people to be good. Let's play another track. And this is Jonas Blue, AWA, and Something Stupid. Something Stupid, Jonas Blue and AWA. Oh, Rich, my angry... Why do I think you're grumpy? My angry builder has sent a text in. Please do not sneeze into the microphone, Sleepy. I will try not to, Richard. You exhale at 122 miles per hour, which may blow my eardrums. What do you mean I specifically sneeze at that speed, or one does? It's a little bit rude, whatever you're saying. Yes, it's my birthday on Thursday. What am I allowed to do? What am I allowed to do, kind of restriction-wise? I'm just going to drink heavily and play. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to drink heavily and play some Taylor Swift and Brendan. Uri, Brendan, me. Did Taylor Swift just say you can't spell awesome without me? Taylor. I'm going to have to send her a strongly worded email about that. Razor Light and In the Morning. I haven't had a morning like that where I don't remember for years. Linda's been back in touch. No, it's not rude. It's now a PDF. I hope it got through this time. It's just us girls' legs after a long winter. I cannot even talk to you, Linda. I shaved my legs the other day and then I weighed myself. I think I'd lost about a stone. They're white and nasty. But I understand what you're saying. So we got the news, and then after the news, we've got an hour of upload and we'll be chatting with one of our brilliant contributors. It's Izzy, and she's going to be telling us everything about her monologue. Ava Max, sweet but psycho. My Tinder bio. It's not, I'm not on Tinder. Hey, welcome to the second hour of Live and Local with BB Lynch on BBC Radio Sussex, BBC Radio Surrey. Thank you for joining us tonight. Please get in touch, text me, tell me what I can do on my birthday on Thursday. Tell me not to panic because it's 55, and also tell me what I'm allowed to do. Text me 81333 and start your message with the word radio. Rosala and Everybody's Free, open bracket to feel good. Close bracket. We've got a lovely text. Hi, BB. Great chat with Mr. Docra, wasn't it? I should have given Richard's proper... I should have spelled out his surname. So it's Richard Docra, docwra.com. Great chat with him as I'm in my 75th year. What he had to say was so enlightening. Oh, I'm really glad. I thought it was fascinating. The book's great. And happy 55th birthday to you. Thank you very much. That's Alan in Hawley. Thank you, Alan. Tell me what I'm allowed to do, Alan. I'm guessing I'm allowed to just sit on the beach on my own. Oh, it's so depressing. You know what time it is? It's time for our first upload of the evening, and it's a very creative one. It comes from Izzy Radford from Reigate, and it was originally part of the BBC's new creative scheme. This upload tells the story of someone who dropped out of university, and it's through a combination of stand-up and inner monologue. Here's Izzy Radford and the making of an education.
Live and local.
Upload.
BBC Radio Sussex.
Oh, I loved that. And we can speak to Izzy now. Hello, Izzy.
Hello.
Oh, I, honestly, the nerve, the audacity, the fame.
I know.
That's such a great line.
Thank you. I mean, it comes across as a whole, it comes across a bit negative, but there were some good, comedic moments in there. So I try to make the best out of what was a difficult situation at the time, and I feel like I still have my humour with me.
So why did you? Well, first of all, I really love the merging of the stand up and the inner voice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that works so well. Why did you choose to write about this in the first place, and then why did you choose to do that kind of technique?
Yeah, well, I really wanted to get two things across. One, I think, you know, human beings are so multifaceted, and in this pandemic, you can see how everyone, you know, goes through tough times, and whilst we're all okay, we all go through difficult times. It's been really hard, and I really wanted to get that. When I left uni, I felt really, I was struggling, I didn't want to be there, and that's why I left, and I found it really hard. But on the other hand, I still, you know, have my humour. I was still the same person I was before. I was still making the joke of everything, and I really wanted to have this kind of interior monologue bit that would just fade into this sort of persona of like a stand-up, fun, cracking jokes. And I think that we all have both sides of that in ourselves, and it's not as simple as someone's sad, someone's happy, and we all have this state of inside and outside that we kind of flick between.
One of the dumbest things I ever heard anyone say and it wasn't me, was someone was talking to this person saying they were depressed, and this person said, "You don't seem depressed." It's like, oh.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't judge a book by its cover, but I just think it's never as simple as a one. I mean, you know, everyone says that, but you don't know, and you've got to just take the bad with the good, really. I mean, you can have bad moments, but that doesn't mean you can't have amazing, fun moments. And I kind of wanted to get, like, both sides through in this whole piece.
And that really works. I guess so, sometimes. Do you think people were misreading the funny in terms of by thinking you were okay because of that?
I think that can obviously be a big thing as well. You can go the other way and completely, I'm fine, look, I'm fun, and all these things when, you know, you can be really struggling. I just wanted to make something that was honest, because I think sometimes people are so, you know, it's social media, isn't it? It's curated feeds, and people can be so, oh, I'm having a perfect time, having an amazing time. I just wanted it to be uncomfortable. I always wanted it to be uncomfortable for me to listen to, because it was truly how I felt. You know, I feel like that can be the best types of art, is when you feel, oh God, that feels a bit uneasy to listen to, because it is true.
Well, that's when it resonates, isn't it? That's when it resonates.
Yeah.
And when it's real deal, that's what people respond to. Not that surface kind of, oh, you know, the platitudes and blah, blah. It's when it's real deal. And I think you did that there.
Thank you.
And this piece was commissioned by BBC's new creative scheme.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
Thank you. Well, it's a longer, I think it's about 14 minutes, the full piece. And that's a little extract from it, a lot about university. That extract. But yeah, it's a new creative scheme. It's a very good scheme for young people who haven't got that much experience. They're going to take you on, and then you get a producer, and you make it in a studio, and it's funded, and then you're allowed to send it out and have it played in lots of stations. But it's amazing, because I don't think many people get the opportunity when they're quite young to have a producer and really see like their vision kind of what's the word?
I want to do it. I might be too old, but I want to do it.
Just talk about myself for 14 minutes.
I love it. My whole career has been based on that, Izzy. Come on.
Exactly.
How are you doing now? How are you feeling now?
I'm good. It's 2 years since I left.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've done so many things, and not just things like BBC, which have been amazing, but things that you might not necessarily have, you know, people might go, oh, that's just stuff like, you know, stuff like I worked as an elf, you know, and I did silly little things that were so crazy. I mean, I'm 6 foot, so, you know, I don't know how anyone thought I was an elf, but never mind.
Please say it wasn't at Christmas, because that's even better.
Yeah, no, it wasn't at Christmas. Yeah, it was at Christmas. But I've done amazing things. I've worked in TV. I've done writing things. I've had a play put on. But I've also done stuff like barista work, worked in retail, elf work. I think the best part of the 2 years for me has just been trying loads of new things and sort of having to be honest about what I can do, what I can't do, and just try lots of different things. And it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
I love this. And is it too soon to say, or do you feel it was the right decision?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I committed to the decision as soon as I left. I was like, right, let's write something about it. I mean, I committed, but I feel very, very proud of myself and my little journey. But this is the start, so hopefully big things will come.
Oh, it's so exciting. I didn't go to university, and I spent I think I was the only person in my year that didn't go to university. I think, or me, maybe, yeah. James. And I was playing gay clubs around the country, having an absolute different
Love
education
it.
And it
yeah,
was just as fabulous.
This is why I called it the making of education, because it can come in so many different forms, I think.
Yeah, I love it. And you give talks at secondary schools.
Yeah, well, I had to stop kind of doing that amid pandemic.
Yeah,
I used to go around schools and talk about, go local schools and talk about taking a different route and like embracing the unconventional. And I love doing that.
Oh, I think you sound so fantastic. We had a really great guest on earlier as well, who's written a book, and I think you'd love this. It's called Life and How to Think About It, and it's all the kind of big questions. And because I was just saying to you, I wish I'd read this when I was 20 as opposed to now. But Richard Dockrell, brilliant. How lovely to meet you, to meet you over the
virtually.
Phone. Where can people find you on social media to find out, keep up with you?
Well, my name's Izzy Radford, so I'm on Instagram, Izzy Radford with two Y's. I'm on TikTok. I don't know if anyone will be listening on TikTok, but at Izzy Rad Comedy, do a little bit of comedy videos on there. And if you just search up Izzy Radford, I'll pop up in a lot of places.
Oh, Izzy, it's so lovely to speak to you.
No, lovely to be on.
Best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
And come back soon.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I love our guests. If you're making lovely content, lovely creative content with video or audio, then please let us know. Head on over to bbc.co.uk/upload. Oh, Bruno Mars and Marry You. Yeah, I will. I love that. That was so dreamy, wasn't it? Let's take a look at the weather, the outlook for the rest of the week. Wednesday will be a cloudy day, and a weak system will bring showers or spells of rain from the southwest in the afternoon and evening. These showers will diminish Thursday morning, but it will remain cloudy through the day, turning colder. Friday will see patchy cloud with some brighter spells possible earlier in the day.
Phoebe Lynch. BBC. Radio Sussex.
The Fray and How to Save a Life. Oh, guess what time it is? It's time for our next upload, and it's about loss and grieving. Billy Elliot, that's Billy's real name, from Lewis, has put together this powerful collection of voices and stories. The music comes from composers Gabriella Biasotti and Holly Sibley, and this piece features Envis Cline, Annie Elliott, Tamsin Cornish, Ross Bradbury, Eddie Lovell, Matt Autumn, Billy Turner, Annalene Leisure, and Emily Hogarth. Here is the first part of Love With Nowhere To Go.
Live and local.
Upload.
BBC Radio Sussex.
We'll hear part two in a few minutes, but for more information, head to billyelliottsound.com. And Billy is B-I-L-L-I-E, and Elliot has one L and one T. Little Mix and Breakup Song.
Live and local.
Upload.
BBC Radio Sussex.
It's time now for part two of Billy Elliot's Love With Nowhere To Go. Love With Nowhere To Go. The music comes from composers Gabriella Biasotti and Holly Sibley, and that piece featured Envis Cline, Annie Elliott, Tamsin Cornish, Ross Bradbury, Eddie Lovell, Matt Autumn, Billy Turner, Annalene Leisure, and Emily Hogarth. If you want to hear the rest of the series, head to billyelliottsound.com, and again, Billy is B-I-L-L-I-E, and Elliot has one L and one T. Marshmallow and Churches. And Here With Me. So it's time for our final upload of the evening, and we return to a radio show we've heard from in the past, the Mental Health and Music Matters show on Radio Respect. Radio Respect is a community-run station in Bognor Regis, and this programme is all about shining a light on mental health issues and the resources available for people in Sussex. It's presented by JP and Louise, and here's JP chatting with fundraiser Andrew Wilkinson. That was the Mental Health and Music Matters show on Radio Respect. And if you're making radio shows or podcasts, please send us a clip. Head over to bbc.co.uk/upload. So it's near the end of the show. I need to say goodbye and to thank my guests, Richard Dockra and Izzy Radford. And thank you for listening. Thank you for your cards and gifts for my birthday on Thursday. Not one of you sent anything. We'll be back next Monday, 8 till 10 on BBC Radio Sussex and BBC Radio Surrey. And I'm going to leave you with George Moy and Flowers. Good night.